write this down. Paul Pierce is the mother truth.
And we're back with another episode of the Truth Podcast, down with ABPN, that's the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I'm James Holis, the world's worst Celtics fan. And yeah, it's a bunch of highs and lows how the show goes. And last week I can't, feeling like Rocky. Now I feel like, I guess Rocky after Drago got a hold of him. Rough week for Boston. It is what it is, right? Long season. But the holes in the Celtics roster reared its ugly head in a couple of bad losses this week. Now, I'm not one to overreact, but I mean, if we did trade everybody, I wouldn't be upset. Nah, seriously. Yeah, ugly week. Went 1-3 this week. Charlotte Hornets beat them up pretty good. But then the Knicks. Knicks came to town. We played the Knicks and lose to the Knicks. It's not a good feeling because the Knicks have been very bad this season. I don't know what to say about that. Isaiah Thomas has been scintillating, but the rest of the team, rebounding, man. Rebounding and stopping guys coming to the rim has been the big issue. Then Portland looked a lot better against Portland. Hard-fought game down to the end. Portland superstars did their thing. Well, superstar Dame closed it out in overtime. Again, crushed on the boards and couldn't stop anybody at the rim. C.J. McCollum with a flamethrower. But it is what it is. The biggest story is Isaiah Thomas, the All-Star stars were announced. And Isaiah was snubbed. He wasn't snubbed. He was not among the starters. Fan votes what got him. So it is what it is. But we have a special guest today. I'm joined by CLNS Radio's Nick Gelso. Hey, Nick, what's up, man?
What's up, Snotty? How's it going?
Man, I changed the name so people would stop calling me Snotty. I can't get away from that.
I know. Well, now, you got to explain this to me, man, because I've been following you on Twitter for years, it feels like, and I only know you as Snotty, and then all of a sudden James appears, and I almost unfollowed you. I was like, what the hell is going on here?
Like, who's this guy? All of a sudden you're following. Yeah, people say that, man. But I'm a legend for the wrong reasons. Like, somebody told me that I work with over at B-Ball Breakdown said that they went to get credentials for a game, and they got checked out. Like, the guy went to the website to look at their writing, and one of my articles is up, and they're like, somebody named Snotty Drippin writes for your site, you know, with a Twitter handle. And they didn't give credentials. They really didn't give it to him. But that's not really that's not really why. It's also just because, like, in real life, I was picking up some sushi one day, and some guy walks up to me and goes, "Aren't you Snotty Drippin?" And it sounds so stupid. I realized, like, you know what? It was a nice nickname to start off my. I've been on Twitter for 7 years now, and you know, it's catchy.
And
it's
you're
fun,
still there. You are a bona fide Twitter celebrity. Before that, the phrase even existed, you were.
I don't like to hear that. I don't like to hear that at all.
Well, either way, I mean, it's all good, man, because you have good takes on the Celtics and the NBA. You're a good follow.
Well,
James is a good follow.
There you go. And you know what? It does. I do feel like I lost something. Like, I feel like I have less bite and less, I don't know, I just, Jay Holis Hoops. You know, it doesn't have this, Snotty Drippin was kind of catchy, but it is what it is. How do you think the week went? How do you think the week went for the Celtics, man?
How do you think the week went?
Oh, yeah, it sucked. That Knicks
loss, I mean,
loss,
man, here's
really...
the thing. The Knicks loss hurt, the Raptors. The win against the Hornets was great. Last night, so it was Saturday afternoon, good game to watch, but the Celtics are far better than the Trailblazers.
And of course, we all know any given night in the NBA, anyone can beat anybody. So it's not that I don't mind the Portland loss so much, right? They just CJ played out of his mind early. Right. CJ played out of his mind early. Dame played great late and made shots like he's supposed to do. You know, that's when you're paid that kind of money, that's the kind of player you're supposed to be. So, you know, Amir played great late on the boards, finally. But again, the problem that always arises came up, right, with the Celtics. We're just undersized.
Sure.
And they smash us on the boards, and we can't stop anybody from scoring at the rim.
It's more than that, James. Think about it. Yes, the Celtics are undersized. But fundamentally, they do not rebound well. They don't box out. It's always ugly to watch them rebounding because they don't play for as well coached as they are, the rebounding aspect of their game, even being undersized, is deplorable. And it's basically because they don't put a body on everybody all the time. And that perimeter, you know, the for offensive rebounds, the Celtics play perimeter basketball mainly. It's drawing all their bigs around the perimeter. They're obviously not going to do well on the offensive boards. So, but the defensive boards, in my opinion, you know, they're never going to lead the league, not lead the conference, but they should be better than they are just by basically putting a body on the defender, on the opposing rebounder.
Right. And, I mean, see, it's two schools of thought here. And, I mean, they can intertwine, right? It's not one or the other. But one group will say that rebounding is like anything else. It's a skill, and it can be learned and taught. And it can, you're right. Like you said, boxing out, putting a body on somebody, those things can be done with repetition. At the other end of the spectrum, you can look at the team and say, I mean, it's almost like shooting, where it's a natural thing too, right? That's why sometimes small guys are great rebounders, and big guys sometimes just aren't good rebounders. And it seems like to me that it's a mix of both with Boston, where sure, the technique's not great, but if you watch Boston play, I mean, we're a small team, and Al Horford's not known as a good rebounder. Amir's past his prime, his expiration date's rapidly approaching. And after that, there's just not a lot of size out there, you know, and we don't have a lot of tough, just those guys known for rebounding. So, I mean, team constructed, what's a way out of this? What's something that we could do other than just saying, hey, you know, which is like you said, it's weird. Brad Stevens is known as a great coach, known as a great up-and-coming young coach, making a name for himself. Every other aspect of the game, he's improved the team so much. How can they be so bad rebounding? So yeah, what do you see any way out with the team that are instructed, or what?
No,
would you,
I mean,
say,
well, because of the size limitations with the current roster, I don't see any way out. I see they could improve, but they suck. Mm-hmm. So anybody could improve from sucking. like I said, you know, put a body on your man. You know, maybe not. It seems to me that Stevens runs his backcourt's guy. He doesn't even worry about the offensive boards. I don't know if you remember Doc Rivers was a lot like that.
Right.
So maybe we could
That's like a new thing in the NBA where a lot of teams are doing that, where they want to get back on defense, not care about the offensive board.
Well, I can see the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, we, as being on the opposite side of the spectrum, can see how being dominated on the offensive boards is demoralizing as a team. So now I think you need a combination of both. It's got to kind of be in the moment to see whether you should be, you know, sprinting back on defense or crashing the boards. But yeah, I mean, with the way the roster is currently constructed, I mean, the only way they're really going to improve their rebounding number is if they put a body on a man. They've got to increase the fundamental, improve the fundamental stuff. Rebounding is what could be taught, and it's all about putting your body on the man. It's all about positioning, and it's all about timing. And the Celtics should be, I'm not saying they should be a good rebounding team, but they should be better.
I'm going to say they should be. I don't care. I don't care what the numbers say. I think, because I want them to be the best. I want to be a good team. And the second problem, obviously, is stopping guys at the rim. It seems like teams, once they break down that first level of defense, they can get whatever they want. And it's weird, which is strange, that Al Horford is still among the league leaders in blocking shots. But, I mean, it's obviously he's getting weak side. He's getting through the course of a 48-minute game. And, you know, no one's scared of driving to the rim against the Celtics.
No, and I mean, Al Horford is probably the only guy who's defending the rim, and he still even somehow manages to do that in a finesse style. So it's not intimidating to the opponent. Yeah, I mean, the Celtics are a big man away, right? They don't need a superstar. They need somebody who can cure some of this muscle in the paint and some of these rebound deficiencies. You know, losing Sully, probably since his second season in the year, I was probably one of his biggest critics, Sullinger. But Sully was a great rebounder, but he was also a great outlet passer. And I think people don't talk about that enough. He was a really good outlet passer, and the Celtics do miss that.
So, yeah, I cheered when Sully signed with Toronto, but I can't argue with you there that if he helped, he would help there. He would help there a lot, even if he was a huge detriment a lot of other places. And
the trade-off with Horford isn't even a talking point, because you take Horford all day, every day. But it is one element that we are missing without – the Celtics are missing the rebounding. I mean, the rebounding is almost a trade-off, maybe a little to the negative with Horford. But the one thing with Sullinger that you're really missing is the great defensive positioning and the outlet passing. in addition to the extra one or two rebounds a game.
Right. He was a really strong rebounder, and while he's not a rim protector, he's a smart defender, I guess. But, I mean, everything else, like the, you know, they kept trying to let him shoot, and he can't shoot.
So we can move on from Sully.
We can move on from Sully. Like, I'm glad the Celtics did. We can move on from Sully. The biggest story this week, Isaiah Thomas, the all-star starters were announced, and Isaiah Thomas was not among them. How surprised were you?
Not very, honestly. I think it's a snub. I think Westbrook is a bigger snub, isn't it?
Yes, I think Russ is slightly bigger. And see, we can discuss the other snubs here in a minute, snubs in a minute too. But yeah, Westbrook, of course, we know, we all see triple double, and we know what he's doing. And like the fact that the fans and the media both gave, Westbrook was number one for fan and media vote. I mean, sorry, not fan, media and player vote, but I think three or four in the player vote. I mean, in the fan vote, I'm getting it all screwed up. But the fact is, he was number one in two out of three. But the fan vote carried more weight, so he didn't get it. I was shocked, but then I wasn't surprised by Isaiah, because there's a certain stigma attached to him. I think a lot of people just view him as this 5'8" kind of fun story anomaly still, even if he's now, I think, second in the league in scoring. And right. I don't understand it, man. I don't understand it.
We've never seen a small man, a guy of his size, score. And don't tell me Iverson, because Iverson was about 4 inches taller, at least 2 or 3 inches taller. Never seen a guy of Isaiah Thomas's, you know,
stature,
scoring ability, you know, yeah, stature, be able to match. And we have a small sample size with Isaiah. I think that's the big defensive moment there, because if he continues this for the entire season and into next season, you're talking then about legacy. But at the moment, he's doing some special stuff, man. It's really fun to watch the Celtics right now, even though they went 1-3 this week. And as far as the All-Star game goes, I'm happy he got snubbed, because now he's got an even bigger chip on his shoulder.
I can agree with that too, Brian. He's going to be on the All-Star team, but just going forward, you know, especially next season when they go into free agency with other players, they can look at the point and say, we have, you know, two legitimate bona fide All-Stars on our team. But it's not a big deal. I know.
They do legitimately. I mean,
oh, yeah, sure.
Bradley's injury might have taken him out of the All-Star running, and then maybe they don't. But if Bradley, I don't really think Horford's been an All-Star this year. You think?
So, just to use a Doc Rivers role, he's been an All-Star in his role, and I know it's not really
how it's voted.
Right, we know Embiid, Whiteside. There's been better centers than him in the East for sure, and I get it. But I see this a lot, and it kind of doesn't infuriate me, because there's no point arguing with people like this. They kill him because they're like, oh, he's a, you know, I've heard somebody call him a glorified Carlos Boozer. And I'm like, when is Carlos Boozer ever?
I don't know about that. He's not that soft.
Thank
Boozer
you.
Boozer's soft.
And Boozer's also an empty calories guy. You know, no matter what's happened, he's been.
That's
a
great way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, if you win, he gave you 20-8. You lose, give you 20-8. You're down 50.
Yep.
I call Horford my offensive lubricant, because while he's not going to dominate the offense, he makes everything so much better. I think you'll agree with this. A big part of Isaiah's explosion this year.
There's no question. I'm on so many shows I don't remember which one, but I was just on a show recently where I credited 30 or 40% of Isaiah's success on Horford.
I mean, not just him.
Horford.
For sure, him and Avery Bradley, because I mean, he's so smart. He does so many little things out there that people just don't really see, but just his positioning, his passing. He's averaging 5 assists a game. He's averaging 15, 7, and 5 right now. And I know you know.
I mean, those are pretty nice numbers.
That's incredible. And the three-point shooting, we want a little better, of course. He's only shooting 33% right now. But, I mean, the fact that he stretches the floor and makes people respect him out there. So,
but here's the thing, and he does tend, with the exception of last night, he does tend to hit big shots and big threes.
He does.
So he hits them when they count. But the biggest thing is the pick-and-roll play with Isaiah. The intelligence, the basketball IQ is off the charts, spreading the floor, the ability to hit the three. And then really the only thing I'd like to see more is let's post him up a little bit. Let's draw a double team and really take advantage of his superior passing abilities out of the post.
And not just passing, like I know you know this, but I think a lot of people don't know this. One-on-one in the post against most defenders, he's fine. He's going to give you a bucket. He has the whole array. Spin moves, hooks left and right.
Yeah,
jump hooks. He got all that.
Spin moves, baseline spin. And
I get that you don't want to, you know, the way the NBA is now, you don't really feed into the post because that kind of interrupts the flow of the offense. But, like, when Boston needs a bucket, they go to him sometimes in the post, and he's going to get you a bucket more often than
not. Here's the thing. The Celtics are hitting the three at a tremendous pace, right? So, and that's such a shock over last season without major personnel changes in regards to adding three-point shooting. But there is going to be a point where, and we saw it a little bit last night, Saturday afternoon, where the Celtics, you know, I hate to sound like Barkley, but you live by the three, you die by the three. And when you die by that three, when that three stops hitting, you're not hitting 17 a game anymore. You've got to have an alternate play, a go-to play. And that alternate play should really be a combination of things, but in that combination should be, I believe, putting Horford into a position where he can score or pass off the post. And playoff basketball, guys, listen to me. James, playoff basketball is going to be much similar to that. It's going to be more slow it down, and it's something that the Celtics really struggled with last year.
Yeah, and that's what kind of that concerns me, but I'm almost resigned to the fact because we know Al Horford. I love the guy. I mean, we both sat here singing his praises, but when it comes down to it, he's not going to be enough as far as an interior presence.
No, anybody who thought he did was doing the Celtics team a disservice. Anybody who thought Horford was enough. And there's a lot out there.
That's the thing. There's those people who I think, you know, it's not even a real talking point, but there are those people who just want to see it fail because they never really watched him in Atlanta.
They want to tweet his sister or his wife or whoever Anna Horford is. Is that his wife or his sister?
It's his wife, and that's one of the worst things. It's ridiculous.
I'll tell you what. They torment her, and she's just as bad for playing into
responding.
She does.
Yeah.
That's a whole other topic. But the thing about Horford is, what's the Celtics record right now?
Right now, Boston is 27-16.
Last year at this time, they played the Knicks right around. And I just listened to this stat on Celtics beat. Larry had on, of course, Grandy, the stat man, Sean Grandy, today. And he had mentioned, and I might, so go back and listen to Celtics beat because I might be screwing this up. But at this time last year, the Celtics played the Knicks right around Christmas. They were tied in the standings at 500. So last year at this time, the Celtics were only 500. So they've improved, what, seven games with Al Horford.
Right.
And they were tied with the Knicks at the time of right around Christmas. From that point, the Celtics lost to the Knicks, so the Knicks won. Then the Knicks went and lost like 11 of 12, and the Celtics went on their hot run for the rest of the season. And it's funny because this year almost seemed exactly the same. You know, you had Christmas Day. Right after Christmas Day, you had the meeting in Boston, which is right around the same time last year. The Knicks win. The Knicks tumble. The Celtics continue to play well and get it together. And it's also the exact same time last year that Kelly Olynyk got hot and the three-point shooting competition started being talked about, and then he got injured. So this, if you look back year over year, which is what I've kind of been doing all season long, really since the opening month of the season, the Celtics have improved seven wins. They're no doubt a second-round playoff team, so they've improved the playoff round. They'll probably face Toronto, and they will probably lose, but they will compete with Toronto, which puts them way ahead where they were last year at this time, which is the easy answer to the question, how much did Al Horford impact this team? Yes, a lot of it has to do with Isaiah Thomas, but turning this all in one big circle, we just got done saying Horford's probably responsible for about 40% of Thomas's success in the last couple weeks.
Right, but I think a lot of people just look at that giant contract, and they think, that kind of contract, we need to see 20 and 10, where, you know, the old Shaq speak, you know, big man dominate, but we know that's just not
okay, but
game.
take that contract and put it into marketing money, because you just marketed the team as a free agent destination because Al Horford came here.
Preaching to the choir,
it's
man.
It's an interesting way of...
I'll say preaching to the choir, man. I 100% agree with you. Like, the people who complain about his money or his stats, those are the people I don't really engage because they don't they don't really understand basketball, I guess, kind of. You know what I mean?
Well, it's hard with Twitter in particular because there's you seem like this. I was like this. I know Larry was like this. A lot of people that I would, Jared Weiss. But at 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, yeah, I had a superior basketball intellect. But a lot of these people that interact with us on Twitter are just young kids who just look at points and box scores. You know what really kills me anymore, James, and I know we're getting off topic here, is just the emphasis on analytics. I mean, it's so hard to have a discussion with someone on Twitter who's, you know, let's call them a Trekkie of Celtics fans, because, you know, you may have a guy who just, and Marcus Smart's a good example, who I don't really care for, but he's a guy.
Oh, yeah, that was our next topic.
He could go out and he can have an absolutely amazing game, but look deplorable in the box score, you know, and those are things like there's still modern basketball fans have taken the game out of the post. They've made it less a physical game, more of a finesse game, more of a 3-point game. They've added analytics to it. The one thing they can't do is take what you see in actually observing the game without a paper and pen in front of you. You're not sitting there writing down rebounds and plus minuses and per 36s. You're just watching the game like a fan did or like a media member did 10 years ago. You know, and I do miss all that. Anyway, now I'm way off track, and I know I got to get out of here. So I know you want to rail on me for Marcus. So you might. Well,
I wanted just to back up what you said and just give you a big thumbs up, man. Because Jeff Van Gundy made a comment a few games ago I watched, and him saying this drive to try to attach a number to everything in basketball sucks a lot of the joy out of it. And
It sucks so much of it. I rarely do I agree with Van Gundy. I can tell you I didn't copy him because I never listened to him, but I agree with him there.
Yeah, dude, it's so annoying because sometimes we see things, and you know, when you watch a team a lot, like I know you do with the Celtics, and I do too. Like you pick up things, and not just Celtics, any team. You watch a lot of basketball, you just kind of know stuff. You can just like say, all right, I know this from watching the game. So when people tell you something opposite because of you know they're diving all these numbers, and
have an Excel spreadsheet on their screen.
I call that calculator Twitter, I call them with the little TM beside it when they start telling me things that I just know aren't true. Yeah. And they're like, no, but the numbers say, and I guess so. I'm like,
yeah, well, you know what? Let me tell you something. Yeah. I've been covering the Celtics since 2007, 2008. Twitter was just starting. I think I launched my Twitter handle in 2006. I was the only person in like a 50-mile radius that had Twitter. But back then, not that it was so long ago, but it was in the way technology moves, it seems like forever, because Twitter was a very, very small player in basketball back then. And you actually had to sit and watch the game. You weren't glued to your cell phone refreshing your timeline during the game. You actually observed your own feelings instead of absorbing everybody else's tweets, which are usually just a bunch of BS,
nonsense,
in my opinion. Yeah. And one of the guys that gets picked on constantly, and I don't want to get, if you're not a Kelly Olynyk guy, we'll just scoot right to Marcus Smart, because we can't have time for two arguments here. But Kelly Olynyk is one of those guys who usually on the box score, you don't see everything he does. He's a very good defensive player that people don't like to talk about. He's a very instinctual defensive player. He plays the passing lanes really well. He plays hard for trying to compensate for his lack of defense or athletic ability. And these are all things that there are no cells on an Excel spreadsheet to monitor, to mark these things for Kelly Olynyk. And therefore when they look at the plus minus, the per 36, whatever they're looking, I don't even know what all those acronyms are on the box score anymore. But when they're looking at that stuff, they only look at that and they say, oh, straight on, he sucks. He's this, he's that. They don't realize that even Al Horford plays a lot better when Kelly Olynyk is on the floor.
I'm going to agree with you.
Let's say this, James, and then I want to hear you agree with me because I like that. But I'm one of the only guys you will know on Twitter who will say trade Marcus Smart tomorrow, but for God's sakes, don't move Kelly Olynyk.
Okay, I agree with you on the first part, and except for the trade Marcus Smart. But no, Kelly, I do understand. Kelly's more than the stats. He's still hitting the three at a very good clip, and people want to complain, I think. Let's get to Marcus Smart real quick, and then we're going to do a quick prediction of next week's games.
Yes.
So just as quick as you can, now you got to go here. What would you be willing to pay Smart in free agency?
Good God. Oh, I'm bad at this, James, and you're asking me this just as the new CBA comes out?
Would you be willing to go up to 15? Would you give him $15 million a year?
No.
That's too much for Marcus Smart. You think so? Okay.
Well, it depends on what you're giving up in return. I mean, why are you saving the money? What are you going after? But go ahead.
I did hear a couple of your shows on Smart, and I was gnashing my teeth. I love the guy. I heard you on Bob Manning. You called Bob Manning's show.
I got destroyed. And let me tell you something. I'm gonna do a media no-no. Is bring back a mistake I made. You never bring attention to past mistakes. But I called him an idiot because I was passionate in the situation. And I've got to say, I've met Marcus Smart. He is not an idiot. He is a really hell of a nice guy. So I take that back. So you did listen to that pod where I was just ripping into him.
You were.
And I got massacred, man. Twitter was like, I woke up the next morning. I think Twitter notifications only go to 20. I think I had 100. It was like just killing me. And now for your listeners, let's put that into context, though, too. That was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, right in the midst of Marcus really struggling.
Right. It's easy in the micro to be frustrated, and I appreciate you actually owning up to that. And you said it. I was wrong, and so that's the big
about the idiot big, part or his poor play.
No, the idiot part because he goes through struggles. You took notice of the idiot part. I did.
Yeah, I gotta say, that was probably, and here we're talking like we're on radio right now, but that was probably. I've been doing this for I don't know how many years. I've been through. On air, I mean, it's public record. You can Google it or YouTube it. I have a rant of epic proportions on LeBron James, who is my least favorite player of all time, and I've never called him an idiot. So, because I don't feel that any of these guys are idiots. So I do want to – I'm glad you – I'm sad that you noticed I said it, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to take it back.
Well, this is we're here with Nick Elso. So, Nick, that's a big thing for you. Real quick, I know you got to go, so let's talk about real – we're going to run through them. We got the Wizards coming to town.
You didn't ask about Marcus. So Marcus Smart, right?
Yeah, there's nothing really to ask.
I just said about 15 million. Yeah, okay.
$15 million. I just think you're wrong because I love the kid. But I do understand he might have to go because of just money-wise. All right.
Here's my thing, though, real quick. You got to get rid of either Isaiah, Marcus, or Avery.
Right.
So Marcus plays best in the starting lineup. And that goes back to media day when our reporters asked him, how do you feel about the six-man position? And he grumbled. He did not want to play, come off the bench. He plays better in a starting role. However, when do the Celtics play better? It's a 7 out of 10 games. With Bradley starting or with Smart starting? I personally like the team better with Bradley starting. I think he brings offense. He brings playoff experience, which this team, the exception of Al Horford, has never won a playoff series. He brings still whatever's left of KG, Pierce, and Allen. And he's an all-defensive player. So I move Marcus in that position. I don't move Isaiah. I don't move Avery. Of course, Avery's injuries always concern me, but Marcus has concerned me too.
Yeah, my thing is Bradley's going to be more expensive, I think. And he's older, so if I was going to move one, I could see why they'd go Bradley over Smart.
Who has a higher perceived value on the market? That's what's most important.
I still think Bradley would because he's been incredible this year.
Logical trade.
We got the Wizards coming to town. Is that a win or a loss? The Wizards have been playing really well lately.
It's a huge game. I mean, last night in the locker room, Isaiah said flat out must win for them. I say the Celtics win with a chip on their shoulder.
I agree. I think they went kind of going away. I think with the Wizards, you punch them in the mouth early, you can get them. Rockets, we're going to Houston. Houston's been on a tear lately. James Harden's my MVP right now. What do you think?
Yeah. I like Houston in that game.
Yeah.
But I think Houston's going to take that game. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, Harden's going to be very – and I think it also depends on Bradley's situation as well. The fact that he's in a boot right now has me really worried.
That's really worrisome. Then we're going to Orlando after that. I'm going to say Orlando's going to be a win.
Win. Now, the only thing to remember is if it's a trap game. Yes. Oh man, I haven't used that in a long time. Back in the KG era, everything was a trap game, right? Because they like to play down to opponents. But it is a trap game. But if if the Heat or if the Magic have any ounce of heart, they will take that embarrassing loss they had the last time the Celtics played them and come out gangbusters. That said, I still give it to the Celtics.
Yeah, but that's their big thing is our biggest weakness, right? The rebounding. So they punish us inside, we might be in trouble. Then we got Milwaukee on Saturday. The Bucks, another team that have been Jekyll and Hyde. Giannis and Jabari are tough cover for anybody. But they're kind of thin in the middle, too. Unless they just run Greg Monroe out there and let him beat us up a little bit. But him and Al Horford kind of balance out. So what do you think? What do you think goes? How'd they go?
Part of the Olynyk conversation is, of course, I think Danny drafted him over Adetokunbo.
And
fans get to be, screaming about that. But anyway, the Celtics always, going back to Larry Bird era, struggled against the Bucks. and that is a Jekyll and Hyde game, and both teams are playing Jekyll and Hyde basketball right now. I'd love to see the Celtics leave the week 3-4, but I think it's probably going to be a 500 week, 2-2.
I'm going to say it's a 1-3. It's a 3-1 week. I'm going to say it's a 3-1 week.
I hope, James.
I know you got something going on here, man. Thanks for taking the time. I ran my mouth too much and kept on.
And I talk a lot.
Which is why I'm going to have you on as much as I can. I love it. Nick Gelso.
Hey, James, I'm available to you anytime, buddy. Now that I know it's an easy call-in, too, I could do it any time, anywhere. So you just shoot me a text. I'm better on text than DM. Hit me there.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you, man. This is
all right,
Nick.
All right, Snotty. You're still Snotty Drippins to me. See you, buddy.
I can't escape it, man.
See you, buddy.
All right, later. My man. Have a good one. Thanks. It's Nick Gelso. Big Nick in the big mix. Now, Nick Gelso, CLNS Radio. Follow him on Twitter. CLNS_Nick. Smart guy. Me here can box with Marcus Smart, though. Smart's the man. My thing is, look, I like the fact he's the one part of the bench. The guy was drafted like a sixth pick, and he's in year 3 or 4. Sooner or later, he's like, well, I'm an NBA player. I should be starting. He's a starting quality center. He could be a starting quality power forward on some teams. He's a starter quality, man. He's not a bench player, and I want my players to feel like that as far as a guy that you drafted so high. You don't want him to just be content going off the bench. Now, it becomes a problem when it becomes like Reggie Jackson, and they start, complaining and whining, and they make a distraction of themselves. So we won't see eye to eye on Smart, but Nick's a smart guy. Glad I had him on. Fun time. I think it'll be a good week. A couple disappointing losses, like I said, and I shifted my point of view and turned myself into a believer in being very good and being happy with just being I'm still doing it subconsciously, being satisfied and being pleased with where we are just relative to other teams. That's all you can do, right? I can't keep holding up this current Celtics team and comparing them to the great teams of the past. It's not fair to this team because that's not who this team is. And, they say wish in one hand, poop in the other, see which one feels faster. So I can wish all day about wanting them to be done. But, it's not going to matter. I quite enjoy where Celtics are right now. Rebounding is an issue. And I wish there's a way I don't know how we can fix it as is. Trying to think of any trades. Kelly Olynyk's not a strong rebounder, so he's playing him besides Horford's not going to fix it. The fact that on offense they're both floor spacers means no one's going to be really camping in the middle. So, like Nick said, just it's back to the basics. We got to get these guys crashing the boards. Put a body on somebody, gang rebounding. It's not impossible, but maybe it's too late in the game for them to be, they can't spend practices. As NBA teams rarely practice during the season. They can't be, going over rebounding techniques. It's just not how it works. So, right now Boston is, they're dead last in defensive rebounding percentage. Dead last in the league. I'm looking up and down the list, and yep, dead last. So, worst rebound teams in the league. So, next week it should be a good week. Nothing's a litmus test. I like Isaiah saying it's going to be a must win, but it's the middle of the season. And this is, in perspective, step back a little bit. These are what they call the dog days of the season, right? Past the halfway point, got a long season ahead of you. I think, was it Zach Lowe, Todd Ziller, one of those guys wrote an article pretty much breaking out how that past January 20th, the standings don't really change much. The 8 teams that are in are usually, on January 20th are the same team that's going to be in the end of the season. And, you know, the seeding even doesn't really move too much. I don't think Boston's in too much danger of losing the third spot. Don't know if they're going to they don't have much chance of overtaking Toronto with the second spot. They're at 26 and 17 right now, which is, you know, that's fine. What are you going to do? You know what I mean? What are you going to do? It is what it is. And you're going to just have some tough losses. The Knicks loss only really bothers me. The Portland loss was, you know, tip your hat to the Blazers. Myers Leonard looked like Wimbledon out there. He had two huge dunks. He crushed Jordan Mickey. Ah, I need to talk to Nick about Jordan Mickey and how he's been getting playing time, what he thinks about him. But yeah, I mean, the Knicks loss sticks in my craw because the Knicks they're bad. They're a bad team. They, you know, they just lost the other night to the Suns, who are really a bad team, you know, but they let Devin Booker go nuts on them, and Bledsoe played great, and they lost in the Garden to the Melo had a last second shot rim out. But whatever. Let's take a look. Let me give a quick hat tip to my boy Jordan Mickey. Let's see how he's been getting minutes lately. About time. Because he's undersized, but like everybody said, but he is a shot blocker for his size. And I mean, he's getting chump change minutes. They got to find a way to get him more, I think. He's not really able to show what he does, but against Wizards, less than 14 minutes, he had a block there. Two blocks in 5 minutes against the Knicks, and why would you not play more? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. All right, but, you know, hey, Brad Stevens is the coach. I'm not. I'm just got to watch him. So that's about it. Let's go wrap it up. Bummer of a week for the Celtics last week. Should look better next week. I'm predicting 3-1. They could win. Even Houston, we know, because they're so deep at the guard position, they could throw guys at Eric Gordon and James Harden. But nah, I don't think they're gonna be Houston. Houston's a flamethrower right now. They're on some other level, which is, it's fun to watch. It is, and it's a pleasant surprise. I don't think anybody assumed that this season Houston would make the jump that they have. And that's a credit to Coach D'Antoni. Credit to James Harden for adjusting to the new position. I was hard on James Harden last season about his leadership. When you're the franchise guy, you can't come into camp out of shape, and you know the team waxes and wanes with you. Your effort is—it's obvious they didn't give a lot of effort last year, and it was ridiculous. This stupid, petty stuff on with him and Dwight Howard. And sure, you can try to blame Dwight, but Dwight just wanted the ball. He wanted to be part of the offense. You don't pay a man that kind of money and then turn him into what Clint Capela is now. And that's what they try to do. And yeah, and you could say hypothetically, oh, best for the team. That's what you do. You can't take out the human element of basketball. We're seeing it in Philly with the whole weird Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor thing. And, you know, that's not obvious. That's probably not the best locker room environment, even if but now they're winning. So that helps a lot. But, you know, people just said, oh, it's great having these big man assets. You know, they'll work it out. But human element come into play. Nerlens said earlier this season, he was too good to play only 8 minutes in the game. That's crazy. Something needs to be done. He's right. I mean, you don't, kind of taking it back to the Marcus Smart thing. You can't begrudge any player who wants to play, especially, you know, a lottery pick who says, I want to play basketball. You just can't. So now I'm just blabbering. It's a good show though. Real good guy. You know, they can do a lot of good work covering the Celtics. That's it for this week's episode of The Truth. Make sure to check us out. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. You can find us almost anywhere. I'll be throwing the link out. Check us out at almightyballer.com. I'm not the only podcast. I'm the only one that counts, though. Nah, you got all kind of team pods over there. It's a lot of fun. I'm out of here, man. Talk to you guys later.
I'd like an answer to the question, Judge.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Napa Know How.
The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO, expect great savings and a whole lot more.